Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name's Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined by Marta Johnson-Litofsky.
You've got it. Nice. That's it. Way to go. It's a mouthful, I know.
Yeah, no, I work really hard on it. Well, I always keep an eye out for the Johnson last name. Because I always feel like a weird, like, kinship spirit with the Johansson.
But do you think that, like, there's any, like, you know, like, a slight, like, I am not a Johnson.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I know my family, my dad especially, has always been really, the thing with the Johansson is that it's really easy to forget the A. So it's pretty frequently misspelled for Johnson.
Right.
And my dad, like, always kind of played with that, too. Where he'd tell people that his name was Joe Hansen.
Oh.
Which is funny to me. Like, that was his, like, you know, like, alibi? Not alibi. What is it called?
When you like, have, alter like, ego?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Joe Hansen shows up in a different way than
right.
Mr. Joe Hansen.
Right.
My
Robert, as it were. Robert.
So, there's always a challenge with having the last name Smith. Oh. Of, like, if you're making reservations or, like, you know, are putting in a coffee order or something. And my uncle, one of my uncles has bypassed that whenever they ask for a name, he always gives the name Buck.
Oh.
Like, pass the buck?
I get, I mean, he's a big old Republican, so, like,
Teddy Roosevelt.
I don't know. I think he just likes, oh, no! No, it's Biff. He gives the name Biff from Back to the Future.
Oh, okay. Man,
they called that. Good for them.
Back to the Future.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they deserve a win on that one.
Wait, what did they
call? If we get the whole Biff being president thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that part.
Yeah, there's a... In Back to the Future 2, I think, Biff, like... Gets a
makes a bunch of money gambling on sports
because and then, he maybe, gets like a pat like he the time travel he benefits from it and then and then they go to the future and Biff is president.
Oh Lord.
And that's who we have as president right now is right. Biff.
As Biff, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's Marty McFly?
In the allegory of today?
Yeah. Bernie Sanders. No.
No.
Hillary. Chelsea Clinton.
Chelsea Clinton?
Anyway.
I don't know.
So, we have you on today to talk about your performance anxiety workshop coming up. And so yeah. I'd love to actually just kind of like for our listenership, for those that maybe don't know you, if you would mind telling us a little bit about the work that you do here in town. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a bunch of years ago, I had pretty serious performance anxiety, so it led me on this journey of figuring out what can I do about it. I really was faced with a choice of either quitting or, like, figuring out a new way of performing. And in my exploring, I tried a bunch of stuff, and the thing that I love the most, and it's become my new passion, is working with something called internal family systems, and it's a kind of therapy, but I use it as a coach. It's used by a lot of coaches. The basic premise is that our personality has multiple parts to it. So, you know, we regularly say in just regular dialogue, like, oh, you know, one part of me really wants to go to yoga class, but another part of me really wants to, like, sit on the couch. So, like, we have that conflict. We see that conflict within inside of ourselves. And using parts language is a really great way to identify the different strands of desire or concern that show up around any decision making, whether it's going to yoga class or performing. Mm-hmm. So, is that enough background to jump into what the class is?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm offering two free classes. I'm offering them seasonally, and it's a chance to get introduced to this process and learn about how to identify the parts that show up within yourself, and then work with one of those parts that has concerns about a person's artistic and creative process. One class in September is at my house, and it's, do you want the specifics right now?
I mean, we can just, like, you can give, like, the specifics, like, now, or I'm more interested at this point in like what you'll be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, sorry. So like, so what does one of these workshops entail? Like, okay. What can one expect?
Yeah. Thanks for asking the helpful questions.
Of course.
So first we talk about parts, language, and how to apply that to one's own self. And so I give a little bit of an intro lesson about that. And then I take people on a guided inner exploration, because this is all about being inside yourself and looking around and seeing what's inside. And then we do a little journaling. And then some partnered sharing. So you get to, each person gets to share one-on-one with another person. And then we do big group sharing. And we go through that process twice. So the first time is just identifying what are the parts that you're noticing at this moment in time that show up. So like a common thing might be skepticism about it. Like that's a part that's like, I'm not sure this is going to work for me. Or like, I'm not sure I really want to be here. This doesn't seem like a good idea. Or fear, you know, like, oh, I don't want to go down that path. There's a lot of deep, dark stuff.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. And I, well, it makes me think a lot about, like, something I've been finding a lot, thinking about a lot lately is, like, the nature of dialogue. And not specifically with, like, multiple people, where it's, like, the idea of disagreeing and being okay with disagreeing. And I like about this is it's almost doing that with, like, yourself. Because I think that it's...
It's exactly
there is,
right.
Yeah, there is like a dialogue that happens with certain like things that maybe are contrary to each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, thinking about dialogue with another person, it's a great way to apply how we talk to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, most of us, we're seeing a lot in the political realm where people don't act very nice, but most of us don't go around swearing at other people randomly. But many of us have a part that might be swearing at us, being like, what the F are you doing? You just messed that note up and you're such an asshole and, you know, like whatever, right? Like a lot of us have that kind of nasty part. So the goal in this work is not to make that part go away. It's to get to understand it and get to know it. And so the way we would talk to another person is the way we would talk to that. Like, oh, wow, I see you're really upset. Yeah, I want to know why. Tell me why you're upset. Let's get to figure this out. And our parts react the way people react. If you approach that part with aggression and like, shut the F up, I hate you.
Yeah.
It's just going to keep pushing back. But if you approach it the way you would another person, like, oh, wow, something is really bothering you. I want to know. That part is going to soften and change. And then you can have a conversation with it and understand why it's showing up the way it's showing up. Mm-hmm. And then in that process, you can start to meet its needs so that then it doesn't have to be that way all the time.
Cool.
Wow.
I'm curious what comes up for you as you hear that.
So I work in food service. I'm one of the managers at a cafe down in Wicker Park, and the idea of meeting abrasiveness with like understanding is something that I have to that I encounter on a fairly regular basis, where like someone will come in and will be in a bad mood, or they've received less than great service or something like that. And as someone who is asked for, like, can I speak to a manager? I have to approach that situation where I'm being accused of something bad, and I have to meet it with, I'm so sorry that you feel this way. Like, let's figure out a way to make this better. And so that's where my mind immediately went to. And so the practice of, you know, and the idea of like, why can't we give ourselves that same level of grace.
Well, and I mean, even as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, wow, that's hard, right? That's hard. It's hard to do that, to meet somebody who's abrasive and coming at you with a lot of energy and anger. It's hard to be the bigger person or the adult. And
I'm pretty good at that.
Okay.
I've been in food service since I was 18.
Okay.
And I've always been like a very like seeing anger and wanting to nullify it. And so it's actually something that I've come to enjoy, is like like seeing someone coming at me with a lot of aggression and being like, all right, the end of this conversation, we're gonna be friends.
Yeah, right. So like, you have, even in those, because you have so much experience, you know the bigger picture.
Yeah,
you know that this solution of meeting somebody with grace and compassion is much more effective in the long run and saves everybody a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so same thing, turning it internally. If we let those inner battles keep going, it is exhausting, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And like, if you think about performance anxiety and all that energy and then all that we do to try to manage it, it's a lot of energy just going into trying to keep things calm enough to function.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I flashed to not anything personal for whatever reason in this moment, but I just started thinking about, someone was messaging me yesterday about a Tina Fey thread that developed, and I, like, it just made me think of, like, well, because what it was a white person that was, like, complaining about Tina Fey and not realizing that it was a joke. On the joke, like, it was...
You're talking about the Saturday Night Live,
right.
The Weekend Update.
Yeah, so, and I'm trying to figure out how to talk about this, all because it's, as I brought it up, I was like, oh, this is too complex for this bit, but, like...
But, like, what's it stir up in you, right?
Well, so, the thing about it is, the conversation got into this, like, basically... a bunch of white people arguing about what isn't racist. And that for
or
me
what
is
or what is satire and like what should be like what everyone's relationship to satire should be.
Right. And so but I think for me the thing, and then it also devolved into basically just like, I don't believe I have to explain this to you. Like, I don't believe how privileged and white and like overeducated you are. And it's like, I like in one hand agree with that sentiment, and on the other think you are being a complete this guy who was messaging at my friend, who like it was amazing because like, speaking of the parts, part of me agrees with him, but also a giant part of me thinks he's being a dick, and then my friend I didn't completely agree with, and then we talked about it and that was fine. But then I also was like, wow, you really did not deserve to be like talk. Like, you were, this level of this conversation did not need to be escalated to this, like, I'm going to bite anyone who thinks that the joke was remotely funny's head off. Cause I don't think that people that are criticizing the joke on its face are trying to take it to that level of this being like, oh, Tina Fey is a racist forever and ever. She's a Nazi. That's not where it's going. It's just this idea of like pulling back the veneer of satire. And the thing that the one aspect of it for me was that I was saying to our friend was that, you know, it can be this really brilliant level of satire. And if you take through all the levels of satire, then it is a really, it can be a very strong social commentary. But like, because the nature of satire is such a white tradition, it's hard for me to see people critiquing people because they didn't get the joke, when like the part of the reason that they didn't get the joke is because of the education of, anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to like get into this whole entire thing, but like, that's where it kind of plays in for me, is where it's like,
not even about education, but also like being too close to it. Like being too, like there are people who are directly affected by the fact that there are literal Nazis walking around right now. And the idea of,
well, even
for, so, like for sorry. Those people, like the fact that people, you know, for them, seeing people create satire out of it, it's like, I'm too close to this for there to be satire.
Or even not being able to afford cable or something like that, where maybe like you don't get to see you haven't seen all the Saturday Night Lives in the history of forever, and you don't know, like, even the idea that that Weekend Update is a character based show.
Right.
Is something that I don't know that everyone knows. And so when you see Tina Fey on the Weekend Update, like, some people who know Tina Fey from when she did Weekend Update get that she's doing a character, but like, we've entered the world now where there's been a change of how SNL puts up its episodes, where it's on YouTube now and on TV, whereas back in the day you could only get it if you had cable or if you bought the
on NBC. That's you can get that over the air.
But still affording a TV.
Oh, yeah, fair. That's fair.
Anyway, so all of that is to say that was where that's my personal stance on the issue. And, like, on the guy that was commenting, like, I agree with him from that stance, but then also it's like, you do not need to be like, I don't believe I have to explain this to you, you over-educated, white, privileged woman.
Yeah. Well, and I think that what you're bringing up, though, is that there's, like, that's a great example of parts that get triggered in us, but also seeing parts in action in other people. And we see that on social media. So your friend, you're friends with him, and he has a great point. Like, you agreed with his point. So he has, like, this intellectual understanding or whatever the understanding is. But at the same time, he has, like, another part that shows up who's kind of an asshole, right? And so then we can also understand that, the way he is showing up at that moment is not all of him. That's not who he is. That's a part of him acting that way. And so that, I think that is, that's been super helpful for me in dealing with a lot of the political circumstances, that even the most difficult people that are ever present in the news right now, they're acting from some pretty extreme parts. But at essence, you know, this is a belief that I have, that all people, there is a good core of them.
Yeah.
It's just some people are really extreme in their parts.
Yeah. No, I experience extreme parts of people a lot in my family. And actually, Daniel met not someone in my family, but someone who is like a friend of, you know, a family friend who is like one of the most extreme thinkers. And it's crazy, like, especially what these times have brought out in people. Like, this is someone that I've known literally my entire life. And, like, I had to unfollow her on Facebook recently just because of her hateful views. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, I've known you since I was a baby. Like, you changed my diapers. And now I find out that... And so it's just... It's an interesting adjustment because... At the core, they're still that person. They're still that person who, like, bought me presents on my birthday and, you know, took me to the zoo and, you know, I played with their kids. And so, but then at the other end, it's like, if I met you now, I would hate you.
Right. Right. And so to understand that people are acting from these extreme parts does not excuse the behavior that's going on.
Right. Like,
the behavior is still horrific.
Yeah.
Right. But it can help us have a little bit more compassion at times. And also, I just have to say, like, I have a part now that feels super anxious that we're talking about this stuff.
Oh, no,
it's okay. Yeah. Like, I can just name that, like, I have this part. We're talking about, you know, politically charged territory. And it's, I think it's easier for a lot of people to live in the, you know, to just have an approach of, like, good, bad. Like, these people are good, these people are bad, psh, done. And so I'm suggesting a different approach, and I think it's really, it triggers parts of me that are like, ooh, like, why are we talking about this? And I'm not saying we don't shouldn't. I'm just saying that it brings up that reaction.
I have a part that, and this has been through the course of the show, because I've always, when I was in my master's degree, I always... had a part that I was a journalist. Like, I cared about the news and I paid attention to it all the time. And so a lot of my conversations, that was a part of them. And but I also was in a master's degree for classical singing.
Right.
And so that has evolved now into where I'm doing a podcast that is an arts podcast, but that sometimes I veer off into a political area. And I have a part that is anxious that that is one of the reasons why we're now past 100 episodes and we don't have as big of a listenership as I think we should.
So do you guys, well, would you be open to trying a little bit of parts work?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great jumping off point.
Yeah.
So this would be an example of what we do in the class. And so, like, we've already talked about what parts are and you guys clearly latch onto it really easily. So if you take a second and just, like, look inward for you, and you think about this artistic project of the podcast and noticing what comes up for you. And so you can identify a part by sometimes it's thoughts or repetitive words or sentences that don't stop, or it could be a physical sensation like tightening or tension or whatever, anything. And then sometimes it's vision, seeing something.
So what comes up for me immediately is time.
Okay.
I work full time, mm-hmm. and my job is physically kind of exhausting, mm-hmm. and I'm very passionate about this project, and it makes me sad that I don't have the time to, or like the energy to put into, like to put as much into this as I'd like. Yeah. Like I'm super behind on emails and mm-hmm. like, and so for me, like it's always just a matter of like time. Like after, like, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm always, I guess there's a part of me that always has an eye on the clock. 'Cause like, I work at 2:00 mm-hmm. and you know, I'm going to get off at, I'm going to get home at like 10:30 and then I work again tomorrow at 8 a.m. Mm. And it's just like, mm-hmm. so it, so, ideally I'd like to be able to focus on this, but right. I'm feeling like fragmented.
Yeah. So I'm going to reflect that in even more parts language, like you already used some, mm-hmm. but so what I hear is you have a part that's just really aware of the actual time constraints that are real in your life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you have another part that's really sad about that because, and also a part that really cares about this project, wishes to be doing more. And so then there's another part that's sad mm-hmm. or has some kind of like, some feelings in that category because you wish you could be doing more with this passion project.
Right.
Yeah. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when, as I say that to you, do any other parts come up or anything else you notice?
I think that there's parts of just kind of like, because, so there's the part of me that is very mindful of time constraints. There's the part of me that is, you know, sad about those time constraints limiting the amount of energy and effort I can put into this project. And then there's also the part of me that is anxious about lack of downtime. Mm-hmm. Where, like, you know, yesterday I had the day off and I chose to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And today I stand here as someone who's like, I am a person who is behind on emails. Yeah. And I chose to do nothing yesterday. And yeah. So, and, like, I should be able to respect the fact that I needed yesterday to kind of recover, but in reality, what I should have been doing was getting caught up so that I would feel better today in that respect. Mm.
So let's just look at the parts again yeah. there. So there's a part that chose to relax all day yesterday, which I just want to validate, like, relaxing and downtime is so essential to being human.
Right.
And that helps the creative process. So you need that time. So you have that part that made that choice yesterday. And then there's another part that's like, oh, God damn it. If I had made a different choice, I would feel better right now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that part is like kind of a critical part or a judging part and like trying to motivate you to get, that's like the manager types that want to get shit done.
Yeah.
Right? And so the manager types really get in conflict with the relaxing parts that want, that need the downtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you said, that part that's just worried about time, because of course you have this overarching reality that you got to show up to work mm-hmm. 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Takes away from all these other things you want to do.
I love that. That's always my favorite part of the show whenever there's a cat like rowling in the distance.
Your cat wants to have parts conversations.
I think yeah. so.
She's like, I need this.
Yeah. Let's talk about my parts.
I've got some. Yeah. I think I've got one.
So, Maureen, do you feel like that was covered your landscape of yeah. parts right now?
That was helpful, honestly. Just kind of like breaking it up.
Yeah.
And yeah. This yeah. is cool.
No, I also didn't mean that you should keep going.
No, I mean, I feel... So now that parts have been identified, what then is the, is it just a matter of like breaking it up into kind of like seeing it for what it is so it's less all consuming?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like the first step is identifying the parts that get activated at any one time. And as you can see around this one topic, like we identified 6 parts, mm-hmm. right? Which is, like, there's a lot going on for you about right. this one topic, just the aspect of time and how it affects the choices you can make. Mm-hmm. So then the next step is getting to know each one of those parts and really hearing from them, their concerns and their experiences. And so it's not that we're going to magically make, we can't make your job go away.
No.
Right? Because you got to pay the bills. Like, right. That is just real. But what we can do is the part that maybe feels sad, we can help that part, like, just be witnessed. Like, when one of us is sad, like, what we want is somebody to just listen to us, right? Mm-hmm. We don't need somebody to come and be like, well, you need to do, blah, 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 right? It's just like, no, just listen to what I have to say right now, right?
Yeah.
So then witnessing. And then as you get deeper, there can be unburdening, because some of our parts carry burdens from the past, and that we can actually help them let go of those old burdens so that then they can transform. And that's like the key to transforming one's personality and healing.
Yeah. Cool.
That was a lot of information.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
No, but it's cool. So then is it just a matter of like choosing a part and kind of like digging up that part?
So Daniel, if you're okay waiting for another minute.
Oh, yeah, no, you're fine. Yeah.
Okay, so Maureen, as we look at those parts that we identified, so you have the one that like is just aware of the reality of time constraints, and then like a sad part, and then one that made the relaxing choice yesterday, and then one that's upset about it today. And I think there were a few others, but like what?
I think that in terms of the most universally applicable one,
But I want you to pick the one that feels the juiciest to you.
Okay, so.
And like extra energy around it.
I think that the one that is getting me the most is the kind of like beating myself up for relaxing.
Yeah. So how do you sense that part?
It's one of those things that I sense in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be relaxing and I'm like, there are four things that like I've, I'm the type of person who like has a hard time napping because I'm like, there are other things I could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, it's a very in the moment, like I am not doing something I should be doing right now. Yeah. Like I'll
and
be,
so do you sense that as words or like part of your body?
I get like flashes of like, well, I'll get like pangs of guilt.
Yeah.
And then
like
I'll,
in your body?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I've got some anxiety in my life, and so like it like mentally. And so like I'll get the physical feeling of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
which is like in my stomach, it'll just be like kind of like fear.
Yeah.
In my stomach.
Yeah.
That's guilt. It's not anxiety.
So just in that, what you're talking about, you have this physical sensation and which is a part that's mm-hmm. showing up in your body. And then you have another part that shows up that's like interpreting.
Yeah.
It has like an understanding of what's going on.
Right? Yeah. And I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah.
That I'm able to differentiate because anxiety is such a big part of my life that I'm able to differentiate, you know, kind of the omnipresent anxiety from I'm just feel like right now what that was guilt about not doing anything.
Right. So the understanding is super helpful. Mm-hmm. We need that information and that understanding. At the same time, the understanding doesn't make it go away long term. Right. Like mm-hmm. it may like calm things down at the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't actually like heal the source of it.
Right.
Yeah. So what we would do if we were, like, working on this, what I would do is ask that part that has the understanding if it's willing to give us a little space to actually get to know that guilty feeling
mm-hmm.
a little bit more right now.
Okay.
Yeah, what comes up for you?
So asking the understanding to kind of like delving more into that understanding.
No, we're going to ask the understanding to give us some space. Yeah, I know it gets complicated. And in fact, I'm like shortcutting the process a little bit because, you know, so like we would spend more time getting to know the understanding too, because it has real value and benefit. But at this moment in time, because we're not spending a whole hour working on this, right? I mean, I would love to.
Right.
But, So right now, if that part of you that holds the understanding, mm-hmm. which is like a very heady, thinky part, mm-hmm. usually, if that can give you a little bit of space so you can get more in touch with that guilty feeling.
Absolutely. So the guilt, I think, just comes from... So what immediately just flashed is that before I moved to Chicago, my lifestyle was very different.
Mm. Okay.
I had many different jobs. I was always doing, like, I had, like, five, like, little jobs that kept me very busy from, you know, 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. doing just, like, different little things.
Yeah.
And this is the first time in my life, you know, since we moved to Chicago, it was the first time that I've had just, like, one big source of income where I'm mm-hmm. doing just, like, the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. And I have some semblance of a normal routine.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be that with my kind of, like, you know, clustered together, kind of, like, you know, stitched together schedule, I could find, like, little pockets of time that I could... you know, like a half hour that I could recover before I had to go do something else. Mm-hmm. Or like an hour where I could like go to the gym or like it's, you know, just like little or like a morning of mm-hmm. like something before I worked for 5 hours and then I came home again. And it's just like, that's just not my life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I think that the guilt is coming from how good that how well that worked, but, and, like, me being able to, like, piece little things together and, like, have little areas of time, and basically I was freelancing, but I wasn't making enough money to survive. I was, like, living with my mom.
Yeah.
So, now I'm doing something that is more financially, like, I'm able to pay all my bills, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't have as much... I like can't do the same number of things outside of work that I once was able to.
Yeah, so you're what I'm hearing is that the other lifestyle you had actually afforded you some more freedom and the ability to like get stuff done.
Yeah.
Whatever those things were, whether it's gym or grocery shopping.
Right.
And now this new way of being, you're finding it harder to get things done in the same way?
Right.
Is that okay? And so that guilt gets triggered when you don't get all the things done that you did in the pockets of time kind of way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you sensing that guilt right now?
I don't know that I think that right now I'm not. Just I mean, in the back of my mind I'm like, you know, there are things that I should be getting done. So I guess I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So see if you can just tune into that feeling a little bit more.
This is really interesting, by the way. This is really cool.
Well, and this is like counterintuitive to how we do things. Normally it's like, okay, well, I know the guilt is in the back of my mind, but I can just ignore it, mm-hmm. right? But this, instead, we go to it and we want to, ultimately what we would want to do is hear directly from the guilt, what is its concern?
Yeah.
Why is it concerned if you don't get stuff done?
So the things that are concerning to me at this moment regarding the guilt, in most present in my mind are the emails that I have not sent.
Uh-huh.
And it's because I'm worried that I'm not doing enough.
Not doing enough.
For this project.
For this project, right. Yeah. So the guilt holds concern that you're not doing enough for the Scoppy recording. Scoppy? Scoppy recording.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So how does that feel to that guilty part of you to just acknowledge, like, oh, I really see what the concerns are that you're holding at this moment?
It's been kind of, like, ruminating in the back of my mind, like, yeah. I'm not doing enough. And so, like, to actually say it is good.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's very common, like, a part that's kind of running constantly, we're like, oh my god, it's a lot. But then as soon as you actually connect to it, it sometimes it's not that, it's like, oh, okay, I can handle that. Or like, I see that you're helping me or have an intention of helping.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mm-hmm. connect with you? Is that,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Thanks for being a guinea pig.
Of course.
Yeah.
Your turn? Do you want to go?
I'll go quickly. I think, not quickly, but like, I think my thing, and it's interesting how it like plays on your thing. Not that it does a ton, but towards the end there, it was an interesting thinking I was having. But anyway, so my main thing for me is I have a huge part of me. I've kind of always been this way. Like, I know that my parents actually always were like, you always just do whatever you want, huh? Like, it's always, like, yeah. It's very important to me. It's almost the opposite of what you're saying, in that, like, as far as the things that I want to get done, I'm usually pretty good about just doing what I want. The thing is that there's another part of me that recognizes that I'm also, like, falling apart at the seams, just because, like, what I want doesn't always, like, work in the society that I'm a part of. Like, so my point is, there is, like, I, as a creative and as a person that, like, works in the magazine and makes stuff and does recordings for people and all this stuff, like, I've found a schedule that I feel works for me, and I found a lifestyle that I feel happy doing. But the mixer that we have right now is, like, on the fritz. One of the power cords doesn't work, so, like, we need to get a new mixer soon. Like, my glasses broke for the fifth time today, and we had to, like, there was so much, they'd been breaking so much that there's so much super glue on the stupid thing that, like, we have to, like, boil water. Maureen has, because I can't see, has to boil water to get the super glue off so that we can fix these glasses that I have that are just holding together because I can't afford the $120 or whatever to, like, because I need a new prescription, I need to get new glasses and all that stuff. And of course I'm bougie, and so I can't just get regular. I can't just get, like, I want to make sure that I get a nice pair of glasses. Anyway, so, like, all of that, and it's like things that, it's this one part of me that's like, you know, I want to live in a way that I enjoy, but there's another part of me that is like, you're falling, like, you're not, it's not working. Like, it's not coming. It's not, you know, like, we have, like, the magazine is, like, so much, like, cool
so
stuff.
So Daniel, let's pause for just a moment. Yeah. So the part that says, it's not working. How do you experience that part?
It's sad.
It's sad. Yeah. And so is it like you feel it in your body kind of thing?
It's just like a exasperation. Like, just like sad, like sigh. Like, it's like, it's just like a wave.
A wave.
Of just like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it with actual words.
Yeah. Right. So there, it's just like this, a feeling and less about wordiness, right? That kind of comes through your body and up and out, like an energy that flows through.
It's almost like a frustration with myself at this point.
Yeah. Frustration
it's like,
with yourself.
Like the second part, the part that is like this, you need more sustenance, like you need more income or whatever you want to call it. Like, has been, like, putting up with the part of me that's always like, well, I'm gonna work the magazine stuff, and I'm gonna, like, keep the podcast going and keep the performance series. That was the hard... We did a two-month performance series, and the second month was really just, like, piss and vinegar getting them on. And so, like, that's kind of where... And now I'm burnt out because of it. And so, like, it's that's the... So right. That's kind of the, like... The second part being, like, you should have known better.
You should have known better. So there's, like, a quality of, like, lecturing or criticism or...
But then the other part of me can come back with, always comes back with, well, like, look at the amazing stuff you did. Like, you would take that back. But then it's also, like, your glasses are falling apart.
Yeah. So let's just notice that you have these two parts that have a lot to say. And it's like, one part says something, and the other part is like, but let me tell you. And then that part says something, and then the first one is like, but no, let me tell you why I'm right.
And
right?
The hardest part, and this is such a weird thing for me to say, but it's a reasonable debate between the two.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, they're not attacking each other. They're just like,
Oh, yeah.
You, like we've had this conversation so many times by now. Like, we need to, you know.
Right.
I dealt a lot with my I had a lot of mental health issues, and still do. But, like, and so, this is a really interesting way of thinking about it. I've never done this, but, like, I am recognizing that there was a period of time where, like, I would beat myself up in a way that is a lot more aggressive. And now it's just, like, I think part of it, too, is because I've worked so hard to make the things that I wanted to do way more potentially, because I'm trying to think of what the other thing really is, and it's really just about finances.
Right.
Financially beneficial. I mean, like, we have donorship from the magazine, so there is some income coming in there. And, excuse me, my like, recording work.
Mm-hmm.
That's also kind of, like, freelance. But it's not steady.
Yeah.
It's not, sure. I don't have health insurance.
Uh-huh.
I'm on my parents, but that's a year from now I won't be.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I hear that even in this conversation, you can see, and you maybe know this already, that these two parts are both reasonable, and they have reasonable concerns, and they're having, like, a dialogue that's, it's not like they're angry or yelling. Is that right?
Yeah.
What is it?
I was just gonna say, I was just thinking about if there's been yelling.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hear that you have a great understanding of both parts already.
Yeah.
So in this case, what I would say is in the parts work, we would call this a polarization. That these two parts, it's like they trigger each other. And as soon as one says one thing, the other one comes up right away. And even though they're being respectful of each other, they still don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel accurate?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so in this work, what we would do is get to know both sides. And because what I hear from you happening is that as soon as one says another, the other one has to jump in. And the way that we would help both of them is that just let one talk and really let it say what it needs to say, really listen to it, and then let the other one talk so that they both can be heard. Both have time. Both have your attention.
Cool.
Do you want to try it? I don't know what our time is like for today.
Yeah,
so.
I was gonna say we have 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
So I think I would, but I want to know more about you, and I want to know more about what, and also classic journalism deflection technique.
It is. It's a great way to avoid.
Yeah.
But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that because that's a great way to protect difficult feelings. You know.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's. It would be impossible if we walked around all day long with our most vulnerable feelings.
Right.
We could not function that way. So having protectors like that show up are very functional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've always it's a fun thing being a journalist to that end. Cause you do have to very much pay attention to how long the conversation has been about you for, how long the conversation has been about the people there. You know what I mean? Like,
see, I don't have that. I could talk about myself for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a part that's like, I'm not a journalist, but I, you know, it's like, I'm totally fine using this time together talking about you guys. This is fascinating, looking at your parts that show up around this process. And I bet people who listen will be able to identify with a lot of these parts. We all have them.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind,
sure.
I am going to ask you a question.
Okay.
What about this parts work really resonates with you, and how has your work with it like really kind of developed, like, if that makes sense as a question?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is I've been kind of ruminating on like the one strategy that I used for most of my life, and a lot of people do, which is like focus on the positive. Like, just think about the right things. If when you're in performance, don't let those doubts creep in. And, you know, for some people that strategy really works, but for me, it didn't. Like, I was not able to ever adequately push those doubts away.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a cost that came with it. Like, a lot of physical tension, and I had to, you know, be somewhat disconnected from the musical experience in order to keep some of those deeper feelings away. So this process has been, I don't know. I mean, I worry about sounding so, what, I don't know, what is it? Just like over the top, but it is so welcoming to my entire personality and to deeply, deeply feel that every part that shows up has a positive intention, mm-hmm. and that there is something positive that comes with it, even if at that moment it feels like shit.
Yeah.
So like performance anxiety feels like shit, right? It's terrible. Yeah. And to work on it, it's hard and it's scary to go into those emotions. But then you find that like those parts of me, I found those parts of me that are so scared have other great qualities. Vulnerability, creativity, freedom, like those parts, you know, that have the deep concerns, they often are childlike parts. And so like, you know, the great things you see with kids, like being in the moment and that inhibition and all that stuff, like that's a great thing to reintegrate into my life.
So I have a question. So, and tell me if this is like too secret ingredient or anything like that, but as far as like the performance aspect of it, do you find that it ends up being a matter of like focusing on a part to live in, or do you find it's more of like a codependence of parts?
Yeah, that I'm so glad you asked that. So in this process, parts are only one aspect of our personality, and the other aspect in IFS, internal family systems, we call it self. Mm-hmm. And that is, everybody has self. It's a state of being, and self is actually what does the witnessing to heal parts and to help, but it's also the leader of the system. So the metaphor that's used often is that self is the conductor of the orchestra and the parts are the orchestra members.
Right.
So when we first start to get to know our parts, you know, some of our parts show up to rehearsal and they forgot to bring their instrument, or they're like, going to throw chairs instead of playing the trumpet. Mm. Or you may have some parts that are like, I know how to play the flute really well, so let me tell you how to play the percussion. I'm really good at what I do, so let me tell you how to do your job. And it, like, doesn't apply.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like a dysfunctional orchestra when we first get to know our parts. And then as self can step in and be the leader, self can provide that relationship with every single member and help each member bring out their best qualities. Yeah. So when performing, parts are going to be present, but there's also the reliance on self energy. And in IFS, they say you can notice self is present when you have the 8 C words, any of these C words. So compassion, curiosity, creativity, calm, connectedness, some other things that I forgot. And so...
Conniving? No.
Can you have any?
No, I said conniving.
Conniving? Well, that... Probably not. I mean, there are other C words that don't apply, but it's fun to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have personally have found that now I feel a lot calmer. And sometimes I still have anxiety that shows up, but it's not that kind of overwhelming sense. And I can have the calm sense along with the anxiety, if that makes sense. So that anxious part is just saying like, hey, I'm really concerned about doing a good job, or I'm concerned about who's in the audience, or, you know, it's just a concern.
Right.
I'm just concerned. Right. And that I can still be very functional and be more connected and feel really deeply in my body. Yeah.
Cool.
That was kind of a long answer.
No, yeah.
I mean,
I think it was
we're all, you've listened to a couple episodes. Yeah. You know that we've got some long-winded people on here, ourselves included.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of... Oh, it's... Well, do you want to... We could wrap up, honestly. We have, like, a few minutes left. Well, so the last thing we do with all of our guests is a one-minute plug for anything they have upcoming.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very obvious, like, if you have a workshop coming up.
Right.
To know about.
Yeah.
But also, it really can be... other things of it could be like shout outs for people you think are doing dope work, or you know.
Oh, cool. I'm gonna be totally selfish.
Cool.
Go Good.
For it.
So I'm teaching these two free workshops. First one is Saturday, September 16th, and it's here in Chicago at my house, 10 a.m. And then the second one is October 15th, and it's online. So you can do it from anywhere. Cool. 3 o'clock Central Time. And we'll just do this exactly the same process we did right here. Go inside, notice the parts that come up around a particular issue, whatever people want to look at, get to know kind of the inner landscape, and then pick one to kind of get to know a little bit more in the time we have together.
Cool.
That's really... I have one last question. You offer these for free.
Yeah, it's like an intro to this, to the work. And so I'm a coach.
Yeah.
So people can hire me to do this one-on-one too.
Right.
Cool.
Right. Yeah. So, and I have a website, which I'll plug also. It's innerartistry.space. And you can register online there for the classes.
Yeah. I was going to say generally social media, just the website, or do you have a Facebook or like a Instagram presence?
I do have a Facebook page, but it's not my strong suit. My website is more up to date.
Cool. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody's welcome, and yeah, that's it. You two can come too if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to look at my work schedule.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested.
Yeah.
Not to put you on the spot. No, it's no commitment. Right here.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dan Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, you can head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. I actually just retooled it. Super cool. So all of our podcasts are going to come up on the radio tab. All of the Scopy Studios we do in the apartment with different guests will be under the studio tab. So that's really cool. Articles still there as well. Otherwise, you can check us out on Facebook under Scopy Magazine, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopy Mag. That's S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we need a little bit more help. If you are in a position to give, you can head to our beautifully retooled website, scopymag.com.
It doesn't look that different. I mean,
you can go to our About section. There are two ways you can give. You can do a one-time donation. If you choose to give that way, you have our deepest, most sincere thanks, and you'll also receive a handwritten thank you note. If you decide to give on a monthly level, there are some cool incentives. First of all, our next donor is going to receive 30 days of free yoga at B Yoga Andersonville. Our second cool thing is that if you choose to give at $10 or more a month, then you qualify for unlimited studio photography from Daniel Johansson.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
and we'll probably like post it up on the magazine, not on the website, but like just on the Facebook, being like, "Oh, what's up, everybody?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that'd be cool. It's working on this thing that I'm trying to discover, which is how to provide like photography and to someday even recordings and like all of the things I do now as a freelance, but under an umbrella where I would actually probably be making an actual living and you would be paying less. So I feel like everybody wins on that one.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about that donating, committing to $10 a month for an open-ended amount of time, but then they can come in and when needed while they're in that donation period and get unlimited photography. Yep. That sounds pretty amazing.
So my plan is, and because if it, I'm willing to like set aside like 2 or 3 hours like a day for that, and not that I'm expecting everybody to just be like every day for 3 hours a day photos, like, but my thinking is that if it gets to the point where there are too many people for that schedule, then it would just be more of a first come, first serve. But otherwise, like, up until that point, like, there really shouldn't be an issue.
I mean, and also, like, let's say you give $10 a month and you get a set of photographs, like a 3-hour photo session once every 6 months. That's still, like,
$60 for a 3-hour photo session.
Yeah.
Right.
And you kind of don't have to do the thing that's cool about it too is you don't have to ever worry about like where you what to do if you need a headshot like tomorrow.
Right.
Like I'm a very good photographer. I'm not like I would recommend if you needed the best headshot you've ever gotten in
like
your
if you're
life.
Sending it off to the Met.
Right. Maybe, but... Yeah. Like if this is gonna be the headshot on your tombstone, maybe not. Like, I mean, we can try. Like, well, let's go for it.
First of all, you got to carve that. So that's like right. a different skill yeah. set.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, I don't know. And I mean, but for me, like, you know, I do pretty good photography. And so, like, if you need something, like, for a website, if you need, like, a quick headshot for something.
If like, you have, like, a cool, like, if you want a Christmas card.
Oh, taken, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Family photos.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And is it here in your apartment mm-hmm. or will you travel?
So we set up a screen. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Not that I wouldn't be willing to travel, but yeah. I don't know that the $10 an hour is worth it to travel in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if... Oh, my God, girlie.
Moody, are you dying?
She didn't get her parts work time. So jealous. Like, this is ending, and what the hell? Yeah.
So I think the one contingency for now is that it would need to be here.
And we have, like, a screen that we can put
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and lighting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we can, mm-hmm. we've got a very versatile space so we can make, and I'm thinking that, like, if we get enough takers on this, that I'm going to head to, like, Joanne Fabrics and get, like, some nice fabric.
Yeah.
Because one of our, we got one new... $10 a month donor. She is a burlesque dancer.
Ooh, fun.
And so she needs a lot of photography done.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking of getting some, like, heavier, like, curtain type things right. to hang so that it's a little, like, more sensual.
Mm-hmm. And the, like, goal, and this is something a part of me worries about mentioning because I don't want to make it sound like I think this is going to happen tomorrow, because I don't. I think this is, like, a 4-year from now goal, is that generally we'd like to get, like, a space. Mm-hmm. Where we could do not just the, like, photography in this format, mm-hmm. but also do recording and do, you know, do the podcast in the space too. Obviously, it wouldn't be the same model, but we're trying to work on basically building, like, a co-op model.
Yeah.
Versus an actual kind of, like, private entity. We're just trying to make it kind of this co-op-y, kind of like we're all working together to make this work kind of thing.
Yeah. Super cool.
Yeah. So this, the photography... $10 a month unlimited thing is just an experiment to that end, and I'll keep up with it as long as people donate to the show.
What a great experiment.
Yeah. Cool.
So give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.